powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
NFL free agency officially kicks off on March 17th, but the negotiating period for players and teams will open up around the 15th when agents can speak to teams about new contracts. So we are not going to know as NFL fans which players land with which teams unless they are huge names for 4 weeks from now-ish, about a month from yesterday. But there is some speculation that we can do. There's some conversations we can have about where guys can potentially land and more importantly, what guys the Seahawks should bring back, which free agents might make them a better team in 2021. And so in order to do that, we're going to do our free agent profiles. That continues today with cornerback Quentin Dunbar.
This is Jake and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run.
Let's go!
Free agent profile.
Now, I said on another show that we did that the Seahawks should bring back Quentin Dunbar if they cannot retain Shaquille Griffin. And I got some flack for that. Nothing personal, but it's also understandable because Seahawks fans had lofty expectations for the free agent acquisition via trade that the Seahawks made this past season. And it ended up being kind of an underwhelming year, both for fans and Quentin Dunbar. That got off to a rocky start when Quentin Dunbar found himself facing armed robbery charges that derailed a huge part of his offseason training and his offseason focus. Quentin Dunbar with reporters was talking about how he felt depressed during that time, had trouble eating, and understandably, football was not the number one focus. Once those charges were cleared, he was able to return to the Seahawks and be with his team, but felt a little bit behind the eight ball when it came to getting right and getting in shape and kind of acclimating to a new program. So he ended up not quite being the player he was in 2019. Let's talk about that player. In 2019, with Washington, he played 11 games as a starter and had 4 interceptions. Importantly, he received one of the best coverage grades from Pro Football Focus. Now, he landed on the injured reserve after 11 games with a hamstring injury. Unfortunately for Dunbar, he didn't meet any of those kind of statistics in 2020 and also had the same ending, landing on the injured reserve with a knee injury. Pete Carroll has sounded optimistic about potentially bringing Dunbar back during his end-of-year press conference, but remains to be seen. Again, Dunbar is one of the Seahawks' 24 unrestricted free agents, meaning there is no tender placed on him. It's he can sign elsewhere or he can come back. Seattle also has to decide what to do with Shaquille Griffin if they want to bring him back. If Shaquille Griffin leaves and Dunbar leaves, Seattle is left with maybe 3 real cornerbacks with experience on their roster, with the most experienced of those cornerbacks being Trey Flowers, the others being Jason Stanley and a couple guys that were on the practice squad. So it is important that Seattle either A, retain Shaquille Griffin, B, retain Quentin Dunbar, or C, find another veteran in free agency or bring in a rookie in the draft. They need depth in the cornerback room. It's all about how they do it. Jake, when we're looking at Quentin Dunbar, is he a piece that you want to use to add depth to that room?
He is a piece that I want to use to add depth to the room, and here's why. You talked about you illustrated some of the background. Look, he went through some serious legal proceedings that put him in a headspace, physically, mentally, where he was not the same player. Clearly was not training, clearly was not working out, and his mind was far from football. That was very evident when he showed up to training camp, and I saw him out on the field. I started to get nervous. I wanted to believe in the fact that, hey, maybe he just needs to be guided along in the process, needs to, you know, just have a slow start to being integrated into training camp. They did that as much as they possibly could, the Seahawks organization. They tried to take care of him as much as possible, but the reality is that Dunbar was not up to speed and not where he needed to be physically, mentally, to have the year that he was looking to have. The conversation about this trade from Quentin Dunbar was is that this was one of the better trades out there because of Dunbar's year in 2019 that you had illustrated, Stacey. He is 6'2", over 200 pounds. He's a long corner. He's an instinctual guy. And here in cut number six, you saw some of that instinct, a flash of it, when he had that interception versus New England Patriots.
Newton's going to throw far side, and it's picked off on the far side. Getting up, turning upfield, Dunbar. But he was touched down by the receiver on the far side. They went one too many times on the quick out far side, and Dunbar was right there to pick it off.
And as Rabel illustrated, they did that a couple times before, and they were completions, short yardage completions, 4 or 5 yard gains. But Dunbar knew what he was looking for and baited Cam Newton into that throw. That's the type of player that I saw and witnessed on film in 2019 in Washington. If he is healthy, if he can get himself back and remove himself away from the trouble that he was in last offseason and can fully train and can fully make sure that he is ready to go, I think that he can return to that 2019 form where he was graded by Pro Football Focus as one of the best coverage corners in the league, and he has all the makings to do so. And so I think here in cut number eight, you have Bob Condotta, who has been on our airwaves saying that if healthy, he could definitely see him coming back.
I don't know if I see a way that they keep both those guys, and especially with DJ Reed, I don't know if they feel like they would need to, but you need to keep one of them, and I might lean right now to the better chance being Dunbar for those reasons, because he might be a lot easier to keep right now coming off the season that he did. And they might feel like, okay, if the knee is fixed, Seattle might feel real comfortable with him, and that he might be a guy they can lock up before, you know, the new league year begins. I think Shaquille Griffin is probably a spot in his career where he's going to want to test the market and see what's out there, unless Seattle really gave him a big offer to stay.
And I have a hard time seeing that Shaquille Griffin is going to get that big offer from the Seahawks. Therefore, I think Quentin Dunbar is going to be that guy that they have to lean on and go to. And it's not necessarily the most easiest, safest choice because of Dunbar's injury history. And we saw how that played out for the Seahawks during the year. Dunbar got hurt dealing with a hamstring issue that he was never able to get over, eventually had to have surgery on that hamstring. Everybody remembers that Buffalo Bills game, but the reality is that he was not able, he should never have been on the field in that game. The reason why he had to be was because of depth purposes, because Shaquille Griffin was also out with injury, and they were trying to survive knowing that Dunbar was certainly not 100%. And the reality was that they were not able to effectively try and hide him. The Bills found him, and they attacked him all game long. That was one of the harder performances I have ever watched during a game. But you go to cut number nine and talk about some of the things that Quentin Dunbar does really well and why he should be coming back. Dave Wyman explains it here.
Now, whenever you drop back in a zone, you're looking in the backfield. You're taking a peek to see what's behind you, you know, receivers, whatever. But for the most part, you're looking at the quarterback and dropping back into your zone. You know when they run a little running back in front of you and set him down, like at 5 yards, you know that they're running a dig route behind you because they're trying to get you to jump that guy. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what I see out of Quentin Dunbar that I think is so good.
So Wyman talking about in zone coverage, how he's instinctual, how he understands the game of football, and he was a former receiver himself, so he understands the fact of concepts and how offensive concepts are made to attack defensive players and try and putting them in a bind. And when Dunbar was healthy, he did an excellent job of not making it easy on the quarterbacks to make decisions. And so I think with Quentin Dunbar, if he can be healthy, if he can come back and have a full offseason under his belt and not have any of the same issues linger in his past, I think that Quentin Dunbar could have a pretty solid year this year and would be an inexpensive route for the Seahawks to go to try and shore up their corner position to play alongside DJ Reed.
You know, the Quentin Dunbar conversation is an interesting one, in part because when the Seahawks first traded for him, one of the conversations we were having was, are they going to have to extend him soon, and what kind of money is he going to be looking for? Because he was one of the most exciting acquisitions in free agency. Again, that was via trade, not signed as a free agent, but still. But part of the reason he was traded, and Jake, you remember this well, is because he was unhappy with the lack of movement on a new contract for Washington. He was originally signed as an undrafted rookie free agent out of, I believe, Florida, and had put together a string of pretty good years, but certainly his best season in 2019, and was looking around saying, hey, Washington, are you going to start paying me like your starting cornerback and not like an undrafted rookie? Can I get some movement here on a contract? Ends up going to Seattle, where we're wondering if Seattle will eventually have to do that. And then, of course, has maybe the biggest step backward of his career. So now when you're looking at the kind of money that he's going to want, Jake, I have a hard time seeing him having a good case for any kind of contract he would have been requesting from Washington a year prior.
Yeah, and that is ultimately why they ended up moving on. It was because they did not want to pay that price tag. So I think that when you look at this moving forward, ultimately, the Seahawks are in a tough spot. Do you want to pay Shaquille Griffin? You absolutely do, but you're constrained by your cap. Do you want to go out and pay Quentin Dunbar? It's a bit of a risk, but the talent and the upside is certainly there for you, and he has familiarity with your program and what you like to do. So do you want to go another year trying to bring somebody from the outside to solidify that cornerback position next to DJ Reed? I don't know if they want to go down that route. And so I personally believe that they would probably bring back Quentin Dunbar if Shaquille Griffin ends up walking, for that familiarity and for the upside purposes of what Dunbar's game can bring to the table.
What kind of money could Shaquille Griffin be looking for? Because Bob Condotta said in that cut, the Seahawks aren't going to be able to afford both. Now, you and I could have both guessed that just based on the lack of salary cap space Seattle's going to have. But
correct.
When you talk about, okay, they aren't going to be able to bring back Shaquille Griffin, what kind of number might he be looking for? And you already have to consider that you've got to spend some more money in that DB room on Jamal Adams.
It's a huge range, Stacey. Honestly, it's a massive range for Shaquille Griffin. I mean, he could be anywhere from, in my opinion, $8 to $14 million in this contract. I mean, the top corners in the game right now are getting paid $16 million per year. And Shaquille Griffin, when you look at him, no, he is not one of the premier corners in this league. But what he is he's a young corner. He's got tremendous speed, 4.3 speed, and he showed this last year that he was doing a better job of getting his hands on the football. Had 3 interceptions. Heading into a contract year, that's big. He's a sure tackler, and that's the other thing that I think Quentin Dunbar does a really good job too, is being a good tackler on the edge, being a willing tackler. And so Shaquille Griffin had himself a year that would bring to the table or the question of, is he going to get a big contract? And I could see a team out there giving him that. So we'll see what ends up happening, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if you see Shaquille Griffin get a contract that's worth over $10 million.
Now, when we get to NFL headlines in about a minute, I'm going to be talking about one big name free agent cornerback. Is there any big name free agent cornerback that you have heard Seahawks fans calling for, or you might be anticipating that the Seahawks sign?
Well, ones that I've heard, obviously you hear about Richard Sherman. I don't think that Richard Sherman is going to be coming back into town to finish out his career. Don't see that happening at all. But what I could see happening is somebody like a Patrick Peterson potentially coming into Seattle. It wouldn't be my favorite move, but he still has the talent to be a good, effective corner in this league. And the reason why I don't necessarily think he's a fit, Patrick Peterson is not necessarily a willing tackler, and that is a really important aspect that Pete Carroll wants for his defense, is guys on the edge that are not afraid to stick their nose in the run game. Patrick Peterson has not been one of those guys in his past, so and especially at this stage of his career. So I think Patrick Peterson is one that could be inexpensive at this stage that they could go after if they really wanted to.
All right, and that is our Seahawks free agent profile. Today's free agent profile was on cornerback Quentin Dunbar. We've also done them on Benson Mayoa, KJ Wright, and running back Chris Carson. If you missed any of those, you can listen to it in the start of Hour 3. It's always at 1 p.m. on our show. Wherever you get your podcast, go to 710sports.com and hit the podcasts page, and then go to Jake and Stacey. You can also find them there. Moving on, it's time for NFL headlines. All right. Speaking of Patrick Peterson, Cardinals owner Michael Bidwell says that he hopes the Arizona Cardinals can retain the veteran cornerback who is set to become an unrestricted free agent. Patrick Peterson and Richard Sherman are two of the biggest name free agents that are going to be out there. But in an interview with 98.7 Arizona Sports, Bidwell told Doug and Wolf, who are the two hosts there, "I've made it very clear we want to have him back."
I think that when you talk about wanting to have him back, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense in a variety of different ways. But, you know, ultimately, you have to look at Patrick Peterson as a guy that is talent-wise. Is he going to help you at this stage of his career to get you over the hump? And is it just because you want Patrick Peterson to be a legacy piece to your organization? He's been there from the get-go. He's one of those players that you would love to have him retire as a Cardinal. But it has to come at the right price. And we'll see if Patrick Peterson is willing to do that. You know, still a big name in the NFL. And has certainly plenty of talent and ability to be an effective corner. So we'll see how that one plays out.
Let's talk about that trade for Carson Wentz. Now, there were rumors preceding this trade for weeks that he would be going to the Chicago Bears. That is not where he ended up landing. He instead ended up going to the Indianapolis Colts. Now, I have separate questions about whether or not the Bears were ever a part of this conversation, and if they were, why they didn't offer more than the Colts, because Philadelphia, this from ESPN's Adam Schefter this morning, agreed to trade Wentz to the Colts in exchange for a 2021 third-round pick and a conditional 2022 second-round pick. Now, Mike Garofalo of NFL Network kind of clarified what that conditional second rounder meant. He said, if Wentz plays 75% of the snaps or 70% and the team makes the playoffs, then that becomes a first round pick. So potentially like a late first rounder, but most likely a second rounder plus a third rounder. That seems like hardly anything for a player that just 2 years ago was signed to a 4-year mega extension with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, it is surprising that the Chicago Bears didn't try and throw in, you know, something similar like the Colts were offering, because it was basically nothing, right? But I also believe that when you're looking at a player like Carson Wentz, if you're the Bears, do you really want to strap yourself with Carson Wentz after you just got done with the Mitchell Trubisky era? I don't think so. I think that they are looking for something a little bit more stable. And for the Colts, this is a situation where it's a perfect marriage. Frank Reich knows him better than anybody. That's where Carson Wentz had his, you know, that's the coach that he had the most success with as his offensive coordinator. For that, from that standpoint, it makes a ton of sense. Also, Carson Wentz is walking into a much stabler situation than what he was in with the Philadelphia Eagles. The Chicago Bears, they are about to lose, it seems like, Allen Robinson. They don't have a great offensive line across the board. The Indianapolis Colts do, and they have plenty of room to continue to keep getting better. This was the best fit for Carson Wentz. If he can't succeed with the Colts, he's toast. He is The last couple years in Philly were just an indication that this guy was never as good as we thought he was coming out of the gate. But I have a feeling that he's going to be a pretty good quarterback. I don't think he's going to be elite. I don't know if he'll be a top 10 guy, but he doesn't need to be with the surrounding cast that he's going to have.
Now, Jake, I want you to take any of the Seattle or Washington State roots just out of your system right now before you answer this question. Who has a better year with their new team? Carson Wentz in Indianapolis with a pretty good defense, pretty good offensive line, or Matthew Stafford with the Rams' number one defense and also a pretty decent offense?
I'm going to take the Colts. I'm going to take Carson Wentz, actually.
Oh, man.
I think that Stafford will have a good year, but I think the Rams are going to struggle a little bit with what they have going on with their cap situation. But I think Carson Wentz, this is why I think I personally think this is a tremendous trade. Carson Wentz doesn't need to come in and be the hero. They've got a good running game. They've got a good ground game. But he adds a little extra dynamic that they didn't have with Phillip Rivers as their quarterback. So I truly believe that Carson Wentz makes the Colts significantly better.
Now, Curtis, passing along a message from the text line, Vizzy Hard Seltzer listener says, hey, by the way, bear down. So
absolutely.
Always necessary. I'm not really sure what exactly prompted it, but bear down.
I'll take it. Bear absolutely down.
All right. The NFL salary cap minimum, the floor, has been set to $180 $5 million, which is about a little over five million more than we were expecting it to be. It could potentially go higher than that. Don't forget that Tom Pelissero of NFL Network said about 2.5 to 3 weeks ago that he could see the NFL salary cap being maybe even as high as $185 million or more. Now, Jake, my gut tells me that NFL owners and GMs and teams don't find out what that number is going to be exactly for at least another couple weeks.
Well, I think it's going to be extremely frustrating because that's what's holding up everything right now in terms of free agency. So everybody is waiting until they get to see what happens here with the cap. And once that cap is set, I think you're going to see a ton of deals that are going to get made. You're going to see the cuts that end up happening with these rosters. So a lot is going to happen once that cap is set. And boy, can we not wait for that kind of news that's going to be flooding through. But ultimately, I don't think that that number is going to be much higher than $180 million. Like I said before, I really anticipate that's going to be $180 to $185. I would be surprised if it was anywhere near $190, but that would certainly make a lot of teams happy in terms of not having to get rid of players. And for the Seahawks, that would be tremendous news. But I don't know if we're going to be that fortunate.
I've got an Allen update. The Atlanta Falcons have released veteran safety Ricardo Allen and defensive end Allen Bailey in an effort to save some cap space. They, like many other teams, are in some cap trouble because of the lowered salary cap. And also, it just kind of happens this time of year. You have to part ways with some guys that are free agents or with some expensive veterans. Would you be interested in either of those guys for the Seahawks?
Nope. I'm not interested in either one of those guys as of right now. I mean, Allen Bailey, he's 31 years old. He came off two seasons in a row where he has just one sack. Last year had a sack and a half. So, you know, Allen Bailey was a good player for the Kansas City Chiefs, role player, wasn't a dominant player. So, no, I'm not really interested in Allen Bailey. Ricardo Allen, he's a good safety in this league, but not a fit here in Seattle. Don't need another safety when you have Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, and Marquise Blair.
I want you guys to hear me out on this one, though. There is another, NFL.com compiles its list of NFC players that are at risk of being salary cap casualties. There's another name I want you to consider, Jake. At risk of being a cut casualty from the Chicago Bears.
Oh,
it
boy.
Is the best tight end in Seahawks history,
oh,
Jimmy
boy.
Graham. At risk of being cut from the Chicago Bears to save some salary cap space. How soon do you re-sign him if you're the Seattle Seahawks? Do you wait for that market to pan out a little bit? Do you re-sign him, or do you sign him immediately? Do you make him an offer now and go at risk of tampering just a little bit, just dabbling,
Stacey,
in some tampering?
No. Tried it once, did not work. Not going to do it again.
All right.
Especially when Jimmy Graham doesn't add anything to the table when it comes to blocking, and that's an important part of this Seahawks offense. You have to be a great blocker, and for Jimmy Graham, that's never been his bag. Although, you know, he is a guy that could bring a lot of production from a receiving standpoint. Still, I mean, he had a pretty good year with Chicago,
yeah,
with Mitchell Trubisky. So I think that he's still got something to offer, but definitely not at the $10 million price range that he has been accustomed to getting paid at.
Hey, he ended that Nickelodeon playoff game with like a highlight reel catch and then walked off, threw up the peace sign, walked right into the locker room. Champ, heart of a champion. That's exactly who. How much should the Seahawks pay Jimmy Graham to bring him back in free? I'm just kidding. No, that's not what we're going to talk about. Is trying enough when it comes to building an offensive line in the draft? That's our question. We'll answer it next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Jake, how's San Diego been, man? Are you excited to get back in the studio with me and Curtis?
Yeah, I'm super, super excited.
I can sense it. I can sense the excitement.
Really excited. Yeah, I come back tonight, actually. Get back in, and then I'm with you guys in studio. So I'm really excited to see Curtis. You know,
well,
Curtis,
yeah,
it's been a while.
I'm
so
excited
I
to
mean,
see you, Jake.
I mean, I'm still here, so
yeah,
I'm here too.
Oh, yes, that too.
Oh,
hey,
Stacey. Yeah. Didn't see you there.
Yep.
I am going to miss the sunshine. Today, it's kind of been cold down here in San Diego, but that's like 60 degrees and sunny. Today, it's been 75 and just gorgeous. So, yeah, I'm going to miss it.
For our conversation at the Open, I used the analogy of showing up late to work, like 15, 20 minutes late, and you're carrying an iced coffee, and you look kind of weird, like kind of a cop-out saying, sorry, I'm late, I tried to get here on time. And it's like, did you? Because you're carrying an iced coffee. Now, we used that analogy already. Curtis, you had one about dating.
Yeah, it's when your friend or you keep dating the same person, the same type of person.
Over and over and over.
Over and over again, and it ends the same exact way every single time.
Right.
You're like, guys, like, I'm trying my best here.
I'm doing what I can.
But then it's like, well, now wait a minute. The common denominator amongst all of these relationships is you, and it keeps ending the same exact way. Maybe you should work on yourself before trying to put the blame on other people.
Now, I thought these were two pretty decent, just because they're kind of funny and we can all relate to them, analogies about trying and how sometimes saying you're trying doesn't really get you very far if you are not doing or doing so effectively or successfully. I compared it to the Seahawks saying that they're trying when it comes to the draft. And we had Mike Salk on with us at 11:30. He disagreed. He said, you know what? No, the Seahawks have used first rounders. Like, it isn't for lack of trying. The Seahawks offensive line has not been a top unit in the league. They have traded for Dwayne Brown. They have used first round picks on Jermaine Ifedi, second round picks on Ethan Posick, and in 2014. I think Justin Britt. They have made moves in free agency to bring guys in, Mike Iupati, DJ Fluker. It just hasn't all come together at the same time. Jake, I think you could make an argument that, though, like, you don't really consider that to be trying. You consider that a little more akin to showing up late to work with a coffee saying, like, I did my best. I mean, I tried to get here. It's not my fault that my sixth round lineman didn't work out.
Right. Well, the thing is that yes, they have tried, and you can absolutely say that, but that doesn't stop the conversation there. That doesn't go, well, okay, they tried, so therefore, what are you going to do? I think that when that is thrown out there, I don't think that that is a good enough excuse to say why you are in the position that you're in. And the reality is that, you know, and the same thing goes with Russell Wilson's performance in the second half of the season. You're not giving him a pass because he tried. You either did or you didn't. You either played well or you didn't play well. And there are factors behind that, but I think ultimately this is the business of pro sports. It is the business of did you or did you not. And the reality is that the Seahawks have not properly addressed the offensive line to protect the $35 million per year investment that they have made. And I don't know how much money total that Russell Wilson has made over his career, but over the last 5 years, they have not been able to get that done. And how does that make sense? The only thing that is okay is if they look at their approach, reevaluate, and adjust. And that hasn't necessarily been the case. And if they can do that moving forward with what's in front of them right now, which is the need to address their left guard position and their center position, then I think that there's an opportunity to move forward and to make this offense, to make this team better. And I thought about Monty Jones on with Danny and Gallant yesterday, actually made a pretty good point about why the offensive line is part of the need here in Seattle, and it might not be in the way that you think.
You have a top-notch, like, top-of-the-line quarterback. You go get guys to protect them. Like, I think that people like to use Andrew Luck as an example of a dude whose team did not go get offensive linemen for him, but that's not really true. They got better at points, and they made efforts, and sometimes they got it wrong, but damn it, they tried. Outside of going and getting Dwayne Brown, I don't really have anything I can point to that's truly like the Seahawks really trying to get somebody up front, which seems to be strange to me because with the Seahawks, Pete wants to run the ball, and I am one of the people that doesn't have a problem with the way that Pete wants to run the ball. But running is about your offensive line more than it is about your running back.
And that is a huge part of it. Is look, you don't need to have Chris Carson or Marshawn Lynch or a star running back if your offensive line is good. I mean, if you have a good offensive line, a group that can really control the line of scrimmage in the running game and in the passing game, it makes you that much better as a unit. And now you're in a position where you might not have Chris Carson, where your leading back might be Rashad Penny, who is yet to play a full season in the NFL, has yet to go through a season where he's had over 100 carries in a season. You need to have a great offensive line to spearhead that type of rushing attack and protection for your quarterback. The other thing, too, is that I think we've been caught up in the numbers of sacks, and that is the number that Russell Wilson threw out there. It's part of the equation. He's a part of that. The offensive line's a part of that. The scheme's a part of that. It's a layered conversation. It's not just one point. But here in cut number two, Mina Kimes talks about pass block win rate might be might say one thing, but the film and the reality tells a different thing.
The other thing, though, is despite the fact that Seattle did rank in the top 10 in pass block win rate this season, it's not a good offensive line, right? It's not well built. I would say outside of the trade for Dwayne Brown, which worked out really well, he's been excellent in Seattle, the draft picks, the free agent signings, they've not been successful.
And particularly when it comes down to the wild card game against a team within your own division, that pass block win rate, that didn't mean anything. You could crumple that up and you can throw it in the trash. And so I think that, like I said, this is a multi-layered conversation. But when we come to just acquisition of the offensive line, just saying you tried isn't the answer. And there needs to be a better answer as to how move forward, how they go forward, and doing things like bringing on BJ Finney, Brandon Shell. Brandon Shell proved to be a good acquisition, but not a great elite acquisition that they could have made with somebody like Jack Conklin that would have been a sure thing, who ended up being an all-pro this year. They didn't even try to go down that route. They went with volume. So is a different approach warranted in this case?
Yeah, there are two things. Number one, I can understand why the Seattle Seahawks front office would have tried to save a bit of money with the offensive line, particularly early in Russell Wilson's career, knowing that he had the ability to evade pressure and scramble and make plays outside of the pocket. That has changed as he's gotten older. Does it mean he's not as good a quarterback? No, absolutely not. It means that his skill set is different. He makes better decisions. He's gotten better at going through his reads. But overall, I'm not talking like look at the last eight games. I'm talking overall. But he's also not quite as mobile as he used to be. So you've got to change up your path a little bit there. The second thing I'm trying to be cognizant of is how hard it's been to draft in general, to have the majority of your picks work out, which is rare, and maybe most especially to draft offensive linemen. There have been times the Seahawks have gone into a draft and it just hasn't been a great tackle draft. It hasn't been a great guard draft. And then there are other times when they've made the picks and it just hasn't worked out. And so again, I don't want to sound too harsh saying you're trying and it's not working, so trying doesn't matter. Trying does matter, but at some point over the course of a decade, you want to be able to say, I executed, I made it happen. And I don't know that that has happened as far as consistent offensive line acquisition goes. All right. Coming up, it's going to be what I need to know. You guys already know how this works, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Send your question, anything you want to know, 710-710 Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Again, 710-710, text in any and all questions you have for what I need to know. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It's what I need to know. Send your questions in right now. You can text any question you have, any questions you have, to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710. I'm going to start with this one. Jake, you and I are both very highly accomplished high school athletes at varying degrees of fame, with me being a little better known than you are. Now, this texter says, what I need to know, question for both of us. Jake, would you rather win a state championship by throwing a game-winning touchdown on the last play or scramble for a touchdown on the last play? Stacy, would you rather win a state title by 0.01 seconds or blow your competitors out of the water? From Chris and Enum Clock.
Wow, Chris and Enum Clock, that is extremely nice of you
to include Jake.
To do that, yep. I kind of did. My junior year state championship against Issaquah, our crosstown rival, we came back late in the game and ended up throwing the game winner with like a little over a minute left in the game. So, it was pretty awesome. So, I'll say that. A throwing a game winner rather than scrambling it in.
I think I would rather blow my competitors out of the water. I want to be like Secretariat.
No competition. You
is that
just
what
want
I'm thinking of? I'm
everybody.
Thinking of that, right? Well, yeah. Secretariat. I want to be
a
like
a swimming version of that.
A
would
swimming
be like
version
Katie
of like
Ledecky.
130 hands. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what I want to happen. Or lengths. Or whatever. I want to just have people be like, "This race is still going on."
Is not a
no,
that's
but
a swimming
but it should be. It should be. Jake, who was the toughest team in high school you had to face? You can't include Tyee High School.
Oh, man, if I can't include Tyee High School, then I'll think of somebody else. Toughest team I went against in high school. Sophomore year, O'Day was legit that year. That was an incredible game. I would say Bothell. Bothell, they gave us a really good run. Tom Boehner and those guys. My junior year, we had to come back from behind, kind of do some last-second heroics on ESPN to win that game. And then my senior year, they actually beat us for the Kinko championship game, and we came back later in the playoffs in the semifinals and had to beat them during that time. They were a very good team my junior and senior year.
Someone says, Jake, can you dunk on Stacy's boyfriend, Brian? My favorite thing about Brian is our listeners keying in on the fact that Brian is my fake boyfriend.
Fake? What?
Fake,
I mean,
what?
My very real boyfriend. Oh, okay. My very real boyfriend, yeah. That I use in stories when Curtis and Jake talk about stuff they've done with their families. I make sure to talk about what me and Brian did for Valentine's Day.
Correct.
So I can be included too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't think you can. Brian's very athletic. He is an astronaut.
He is an astronaut. He is not here. So yes, I think I could make that happen. Okay. I think that was very, very doable.
Would you guys rather, question for all of us, would you guys rather have two 1,000-yard receivers or two 1,000-yard rushers? I lost it in the text line because it's moving quickly, but he or she said, for instance, I'd rather have like a really great like Carson-Nick Chubb kind of duo rather than just DK Tyler Lockett if I had to choose something I'd want every year.
Gotcha. What I want every year is I want to win.
No, Jake, you have to choose. Boo, you have to choose.
Two 1,000-yard receivers. It's
Knew
much
it.
More fun
what
to watch.
Quarterback
it.
Answer.
Of course it is. Of course it's what my answer is going to be. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
I am also going to say two 1,000-yard receivers. The drawback to that, though, being that sometimes that means that you are not getting much use out of your other guys. Now, sometimes it's the Rams where you just have two guys that are great, and then everyone else you have is good. They just aren't as good. Or you can be, you know, where the Seattle Seahawks were a little bit, where your tight ends are getting, like, no love whatsoever. And you have, I think, Jacob Hollister might have led all of them. The most yards a tight end got for the Seahawks this year was something like 250-something. So it just completely drops off after your top two guys.
I'm looking at the teams that have had two 1,000-yard rushers in the same season. It's only happened 7 times. And only one of those 7 teams went on to win the Super Bowl, and that was the 72 Dolphins, who had a perfect season. So if you're going to win that way, you got to be perfect, I guess.
What I need to know, since you guys like knockoff cereal, what knockoff of anything is better than the original?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Knockoff from the original.
Is there like a TV show or...
like a store brand food,
store brand
better
thing.
Than the
Honestly,
original.
Like shout out to Kroger, shout out to Kirkland,
Lucerne,
shout out to Lucerne, shout out to the local brands that like I've never lived outside of Washington State, and so I didn't realize how many things that I grew up with. And this is going to sound very close minded, but like I didn't realize, for instance, that Bartell Drugs was not something that was just everywhere.
Yeah, no, that's just around here.
Yeah,
I know,
just here.
But I realized that when I was like in college, and I there were people there from, you know, Idaho, or obviously further than that, that were like, wait, what?
I love that you're like from Idaho. They were just so far away.
Oh. People
oh,
from
man.
Idaho.
Yeah, they're just way out there. I'll have to say this. This might be highly controversial, but I think the off-brand Fruit Loops, there really is no difference.
That's not controversial. That's a very fair take.
Tutti Frutti's, which is the off-brand name, I think is very comparable to actual Fruit Loops.
Now, Jake, someone wants to know if you're allowed to say who's out there training in San Diego.
That's easy. It's nobody. It's just Russell right now, just trying to get his baseline going, get everything started to kick off the offseason, and probably won't bring in guys to come in and train and throw and do all that stuff probably till maybe mid-March, I would think, mid-March, April. So we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, we'll definitely be around and getting to work. So I can't wait. Can't wait for that to start happening.
From the 206, with a real possibility of losing Chris Carson, what other free agent running back do you guys see as a good fit for the Seahawks?
Oh,
I wrote about this. Let me get my article. Hang on. What did I say?
There are really good ones out there.
No,
the question is, are we just talking just to talk, or are we talking about reality?
Talking reality. Reality. I don't want to hear Aaron Jones would be cool.
Yeah, Aaron Jones
Leonard Fournette
cool.
would be cool.
But look, the reality in my mind is you're going to be bringing in, Curtis, bring in earplugs, bringing in somebody like Mike Davis.
Oh.
You're going to be bringing in somebody like Jamal Williams, potentially. Marlon Mack, Carlos Hyde returning.
What about James Conner or James White?
I mean, James Conner is a good player, but he really dropped off in terms of his production this last season.
Yeah, but that makes him affordable.
It does make him affordable, but part of that you do wonder is also because did they start passing the ball way too much and not utilizing James Conner in the same way? Those are things I have questions about. Kenyon Drake, I wonder how expensive his contract is going to be. I think that when you look at the two running backs in this free agent market that should get paid the most, I believe, is going to be Chris Carson and Aaron Jones. And followed behind that is Kenyon Drake. But, I mean, we'll see if that ends up happening. I don't know if – I think Kenyon Drake probably is going to be outside the price range, but he would be a pretty awesome addition. But I still think it's going to be of the lane of a Mike Davis – a Jamal Williams, Marlon Mack, Carlos Hyde, those type of players. And I think that's what we're dealing with in the free agent market.
Question. It seems like there were a lot of drops last year by the wide receivers. Tight spots, or are the issues more that Russ throws really hard? Does a quarterback need to hold back?
Ugh.
Great to be accurate, but seems like they had a hard time being able to catch what looked like a catchable ball.
There is nothing more annoying than people or receivers saying, you throw it too hard. Just catch the ball. Your job is to catch the ball.
Yeah, but what if this guy's got a rocket for an arm and what you need to do is have a little touch on that?
Look, if you're throwing it from 5 yards away and you're BBing it in there,
fastball.
Then that's a problem. But, you know, outside of that, there's really no excuses. And the reality is look, this very rarely happens. DK Metcalf was better about it this year than last year. Or his rookie year. I expect him to continue to improve in that area. But, you know, Tyler Lockett's always, always on the money.
We might all have the same answer for this one. Very, very last question for what I need to know. What's the best food to eat the day after it's originally made? It's got to be pizza.
It is pizza.
It's pizza and it's not close. Who said salad? Tell me who says salad. No one.
Lettuce gets brown.
Who would ever say salad?
Most food is disgusting the next day. Pizza, arguably better. You can make the case so good.
Perfect.
Jake, is that your answer?
Yeah, it's got to be pizza. I mean, it's the obvious go-to. But I will say pasta is also a pretty easy one to
read. Yeah, because it kind of thickens.
Yeah.
Okay, what
my go-to
would be
Olive Garden. You can never go wrong, especially when they got that to-go, you take and to-go deal that they have right now. That's pretty legit.
All right, that'll do it for us today. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross, producer Curtis Rogers on the board. Don't go anywhere, though, because the sports talk continues. Wyman and Bob is next on 710 ESPN Seattle.